Ukraine Calling.
I formed and I founded Ukraine Business News in 2018.
And you're an American citizen. Why are you leaving the richest, best country in the world to go to Ukraine, which has very many challenges?
People still don't understand how big the opportunity is here in Ukraine. Nobody ever invested significant amount of money to that. Ukraine has the second largest deposits of lithium, which is used to produce the batteries for electric cars.
Let's say we win the war. Don't we still have the other problems, rule of law, corruption?
People will never believe the government until they see people behind the bars. I think not even the war is stopping the investors. The corruption level of Ukraine is stopping investors.
Good day, everyone. This is Brian Bonner, host of Hromadske Radio's Ukraine Calling with another exciting episode. I'm very glad to have this week Andriy Prima. He is a very interesting Ukrainian-American, co-founder and chairman, I guess, of Ukraine Business News, a must-read source of business news and commentary since 2018, for six years now, and more. And so welcome to the program, Andriy.
Thank you, Brian, for having me. It's a pleasure.
And it's so must-read, I even paid my $99 subscription. He had it free for all this time, but obviously you can't build a business by giving away things. And so he started a subscription, which is challenging in these publishing times. But Andriy, I think, you know, I've read your biography and you were born in Kazakhstan. I think you grew up in Ukraine. You left for America 21 years ago in 2003, and you came back 6 months before the start of the full-scale war. And you were an investment banker too. Tell us about your background and why you started Ukraine Business News.
First of all, yes, after graduation from university in Ukraine, I worked for a year, but I actually wasn't satisfied with my education. And I thought that was a time to take it to the next level. And the next level was an MBA degree in United States. And United States has always been famous for great business programs. So in 2003, I received a student visa and went to United States to study. So I graduated from two colleges there, and I went straight to Cleveland State of Ohio. And this is where the school of my dream was, Case Western Reserve University. And I'm actually graduated from MBA program at Weatherhead School of Management. So I went there in 2003, graduated from Case Western in 2013, got my first job at Goldman, and spent there a little bit over a year. Then I worked for other few financial firms and investment firms, and the firms that were mostly concentrated on investments in the real estate and real estate development. However, in 2017, I started thinking about returning home. The idea was, okay, how do I build that bridge back to home? I was away for almost 18 years at that time. Your friends are not working in the same places where they used to work. You don't have those people that you used to know. So you're coming back home completely as a stranger. You don't know people. And I met a Wall Street journalist who was actually looking for investors. Investors in, back in the day, it was Ukraine Business Journal. It was 2017, and I saw a great opportunity because I liked the style of reporting. It was short news, positive, and people actually, you know, loved the news. And at that time, if you remember, there was no English publications besides Kyiv Post.
Yes. I remember. I was there.
But Kyiv Post was covering so many different issues, politics, business, and culture, and this and this and that. But my idea was to create something unique, which will be specifically talking about business. Mm-hmm. What is actually happening in Ukraine, in the business environment, investment environment, and what's the struggles of the investors in Ukraine, in Sutter? I formed and I founded Ukraine Business News in 2018. So I left that team of Ukraine Business Journal and I hired a couple of people, and this is how it started. So in what it helped, it really actually helped to, you know, be introduced to so many people. We were specifically talking about business issues in Ukraine, and this is what that model attracted so many people. And actually, even as of today, I would say 70% of people are foreigners who are reading the news and who are, like, mostly who are interested in Ukrainian market. So that was the idea. The idea was to build a publication who would probably educate or inform people about the investment landscape of Ukraine. So usually, like, when I meet with people and they say, oh, Andrew, it's nice meeting you. We've been reading UBN news for the last 5 years. And when I started actually thinking about investing in Ukraine, after reading your news about a year, I already had a great understanding what kind of environment out there and what I can do in order to succeed.
Well, that's very brave and entrepreneurial, because as you know, we have our own challenges. But before we get to that, maybe I'll ask you, I'm not Ukrainian-American. I'm an American who is a permanent resident of Ukraine, who's made this my home. And friends and family always ask me, especially now during our, what are you doing? And you're an American citizen. Why are you leaving the richest, best country in the world to go to Ukraine, which has very many challenges? How do you answer your...
It's a very interesting question. So people keep on asking me the same question, and sometimes they just say, you're crazy. Why?
I heard that, yes.
Yeah. You had an opportunity to live 2 days right before the war, because we were informed that the war is going to start in a couple of days or maybe a week. And a friend of mine just called me on February 22nd and said, Andrew, it's going to happen. It's not going to be 2013-14. It's going to be bigger than that. And I've seen many Americans live in the country. But it took me so many years to finally return to Ukraine. And I was like, you know what? I've been dreaming about coming back to Ukraine and share my experiences, my expertise, and be helpful for this country. And I decided to stay. And my wife and I, we stayed. And I've never had any regrets. But at the same time, Brian, people still don't understand how big the opportunity is here in Ukraine. When people see those roads that are totally, you know, all broken, those are the opportunities. Sooner or later, somebody's going to build those roads. When you see those destroyed bridges, sooner or later, somebody's going to be building those bridges. So our country is extremely underdeveloped. This is where the opportunities are. I understand there is a war. I'm not saying that everything is perfect in our country, but we will get to that point when there's going to be times when people will be more than happy to come to this country, invest, and see this country rising from the ashes.
In your mind, well, let's hope we don't get to the ashes. In your mind, are you more Ukrainian or more American?
I'm Ukrainian from, you know, by my heart, but the United States is my second hometown. I love Cleveland. That's right. My second hometown, I would say.
And fine city.
And America gave me so much
opportunities,
education, and the way I'm thinking right now.
Sounds like you got tired of working for other people too.
That's true.
Like a true entrepreneur. Well, I have to say, you know, one thing I like about Ukraine Business News, many things I like, but it's a positive outlook. It's very informative. It doesn't take a lot of time to get through that day's news. And yet, do a good job of picking out highlights. But it's not cheerleader. It's not, you know, American commerce cheerleader. Everything is great. Everything is rosy. Come here now. In fact, your editorials are some of the hardest hitting that we've seen, that I've seen. It injects a dose of realism. One thing I want to ask you now, before the full scale war, Ukraine already had problems with rule of law, corruption, bureaucracy, Soviet infrastructure, Soviet mindset, etc. Now, if you add to that the full-scale war, that's a powerful deterrent to investors. And even Zelensky, who I think you're reasonably favorably disposed to administration, Rostislav Sherma, said we're not going to get any meaningful investment until the war is over. And I heard General David Petraeus, who is on the board of KKR, it's a big investment firm in D.C. with $560 billion, as in B, of investment assets. And he says, we're not going to take the big step until the war is over and all these other problems are solved. Do you agree? And given that situation, where's the optimism and where's the investment?
The largest investments, and we're talking about one firm is investing $3 billion, $5 billion, is not going to happen before the war is over. I agree with that. So in general, because we have lots of information coming through UBN and we see what people's requests are, what they're interested in, that what are interested in, and we see that many companies already started doing due diligence. Do I want to say everything's perfect, everyone is rushing to invest? No, not at all. But the companies who are actually have the plans after the war is over, have the plans to invest, they're already doing some work. So they're already exploring. They already have their own people, open offices. They're exploring, doing due diligences. For example, they want to work in mining. Okay, so they're already doing some work. Mostly, big foreign businesses are not investing yet. Okay. However, small, medium-sized businesses are already making first steps. Let's define what is a big company or a large investment is. For example, just a recent news was that the Canadian company actually that is interested in investments in mining already making first steps of investing $800 million. And this is, I would say, it's a significant amount of money. So as of today, they already making first steps and trying to get the permits for mining. So I think $800 million is a big sum of money. I would say it's a large business.
That was the mining permit process was a corruption riddled one in the past. Did you take note of the Horizon Capital? What did you think of this? The Voya Cable Vodafone merger.
Yeah, I believe this is the French investor.
Right.
The French investor, and he purchased the Voya company, and he's purchasing a mobile company, and he's trying to merge that with his large holding company. And I think because he sees the potential, for sure. Because, look, during such conflicts, people buying for cheap. Because I've seen that people, you know what? I'm not interested. They're panicking. I want to sell it. And people sell it at the half price.
Rock
I'm talking,
on.
Yeah, exactly. So some, you know, companies with deep pockets taking advantage of that. So for example, Ukrainian government putting for sale seaports and river ports. When I spoke to British investors and there was like $5 million for a seaport when in our country it costs like $1 billion, $2 billion. I was like, yes, it's not a brand new seaport. You have to invest probably $500 million to build the infrastructure, but that's the potential, right. You know, and British companies, for example, coming to Ukraine, I've hosted so many of them. They come in and looking around, they explore it. They're meeting with the government officials. They're meeting with the stakeholders. They're looking at things. But for example, but we're talking about the foreign businesses. However, foreign businesses that have been doing business in Ukraine for quite a long time, they're not afraid to invest. So, and for example, McDonald's just announced that they invest in 1 billion hryvnia and opening 6 new stores, okay?
Yeah, I agree with you there. The insiders know the ins and outs. How is the war going to change what sectors are going to be really attractive? Now, first, we got to win the war.
Yes, correct.
And what we've known, and I know you've written about this, is that basically our defense sector was destroyed from the years 2000 to 2014. We gave away our nuclear weapons in the 1990s. So we had and now we see Western aid is very slow and inadequate. This all argues that the defense sector, domestic production of weaponry is going to have to be the investment priority.
But this is what's happening. So this is the biggest amount of money from the foreign investors are coming into this defense sector, because it's not just investing into a defense sector. You can actually build the weapons, build the new, like you can implement the new innovations and test them at the front lines. Like, can you imagine how many companies are selling the weapons that probably never been tested actually in a real war zone? And this is a totally different.
Unfortunately, we are the testing ground. Yes.
Yeah. And this is like, I see so many companies interested and they actually invest in artificial intelligence, for example, electronic warfare, which is like, we need it so badly. And we, like, as a government attracts so many foreign companies, German companies, French companies, British companies to collaborate. The Zelensky's government is actually making sure that these companies have everything that they need in order to start their operations in Ukraine, because we're running out of the time.
Defense sector is a bright spot, you see, for investment. What other bright spots have you seen or do you see now?
For example, a German company bought, and like I'm going to go like I have a small list, but the German company bought an amber deposit in the Rivne region, okay? So they understand that, look, first of all, you know how cheap they're buying that in Ukraine, especially at these times. Concord Capital, this is a Ukrainian company, purchased a limestone deposit in the Dnipropetrovsk region. And Dnipropetrovsk region is being shelled constantly. So, I mean, there's some assets that the companies are interested in. So let's not forget, Ukraine has the second largest deposits of lithium, which is used to produce the batteries for electric cars. And you see, it's all over the news that the number of electric cars purchased, not just in Ukraine, all over the world, is increasing constantly. So this is a huge market. And can you imagine with a cheap deposit cost, cheap permits, and cheap labor cost, the cost of mining the lithium or producing the batteries is going to be, you know, very competitive to the whole market. I think even China cannot compete with such a low prices. I think this is the opportunities, and that's one of them. So, I mean, we're not talking about, for example, Ukrnafta just announced a couple of days ago, they want the foreign investors and partners come and help Ukrnafta, the state company Ukrnafta, to drill wells and, you know, mine oil. Resources of Ukraine extremely rich. But it's never been, nobody ever like invested significant amount of money to that, yeah, because there was no political stability. And now there is a war. So, however, those foreign companies looking around, they do due diligence for the future investments. So the only thing we need right now is to win the war. And I think the investments will come to Ukraine. I'm not sure if we're talking about like $1 trillion. I don't want to talk about that. Oh, we're going to get $1 trillion. We won't get $1 trillion. Let's be realistic. But I agree hundreds of billions of dollars can come to this country.
Let's say we win the war. Don't we still have the other problems, rule of law, corruption? Because now, as you see, there's corruption scandals and big ones busting out every day by the investigative journalists and to some extent government catching people stealing from the defense sector, or, you know, the usual ways through inflated procurements and kickbacks. And do you see that we've made progress in that area aside from the war?
So let's compare how it was in 2000s. And let's compare 2020. It would be probably easy to compare, okay? Mid-2000s. So I think back in the day, do you remember, like, there's a Gangadze journalist. He was just simply killed for investigating.
I'll never forget him.
You
as
see.
Long as I live, yes.
So now you see, if journalists catch or any schemes that are done by the government officials, it goes up to the surface. And these basically people are being tearing up, like being torn apart completely. So there is already, I would say, compared to what it was 10, 15 years ago, there is a progress. Do I want to say it's like good? Like, I mean, that good? No. But our government will have no choice but to change the system.
I will agree with you that there's progress in exposing. The breakdown is in the criminal justice system, prosecuting, having speedy and fair trials, and actually getting conviction and deterring that. Because if you remember, Gheorghe Nkazi's, the person who most people believe ordered his murder, former President Leonid Kuchma, never faced any real serious investigation, despite allegations, evidence, the evidence trail that pointed in his direction. And it's not just that. We've never really, I can still not name, and I could never name somebody convicted of corruption, of high-scale corruption, can you?
That's, I think, the biggest problem, because our government definitely wants to be a part of the European Union. They will do all the reforms that they ask to do. However, where are the people who go to jail? For example, there are so many government officials in the last 12 months that have been actually caught taking a bribe of $3.2 million. And these guys actually, as of today, applying back to those jobs. There's a
revolving door. It's great.
Exactly. So, I mean, people will never believe the government until they see people under, like, behind the bars.
Let's just run down a short list of the top officials since the full-scale war who have gotten fired with more than a taint of corruption following many of them. Where there's smoke, there could be fire. The central bank governor, gone. Prosecutor general, gone. Head of SBU, Security Service of Ukraine, SBU, gone. Deputy head of administration, Kirill Tymoshenko, gone. But now defense procurement, which is not a...
It's even a better spot. It's a sweeter spot.
It's not an encouraging sign. So I know you're very passionate about that because you've written about it. You recently had a story. We highlighted the top-level corruptions where vast amounts of money get stolen and illegality and killings and so forth. But you had something close to home. Can you relate that? A little... But it shows that it gets to even your house.
Right. I live right in the center of Kyiv, in Bessarabka area. And it's interesting because I admire old architecture, okay? And I live in an old building that was built in 1911. So, and back in the day when it was USSR, those apartments were given to people, like even around this area, around Khrushchev, to the people who used to be government workers or professors. So pretty, you know, I would say famous and people who actually deserve apartments like that. And my neighbor right behind the wall is a very old lady. She was a professor. She was a very intelligent person. We spoke time to time. And I lived there only, I would say, 2.5 years. So she just recently died, and she never had a family. She never had children. And the neighbors, we were helping her sometimes, just giving, like, run in and take the trash out or buy pills. And so she died. She died, and the only relative she had was her second cousin. So when the police came, so they took the body out of the apartment, all the formal staff, and the lady who is actually her second cousin, who inherited this apartment, she never received any documents from the police, not death certificate, nothing. So she's been knocking on doors on that police station, and she actually has never received any documents. So 2 weeks ago, there's this random people just broke the door and started doing remodeling. So we approached them and I asked, excuse me, who are you? Do you have any documents for this
apartment? Showing you own the apartment.
Yeah, sure. Like, no problem. Like, we would love to welcome new neighbors. Please welcome. But we want to make sure, do you know actually the lady? Because we knew the relative of the lady who died. She was like, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about, guys. We didn't sell anything. I couldn't even register the inheritance papers or whatever it's called. And there was like, look, don't put your nose in somebody else's business. Everything's taken care of. And the cops are aware what's happening here. And blah. I was like, what do you mean? So I called the police station and I was like, look, just don't put your nose in somebody else's business. You were warned. And I was like, Jesus Christ, this is 2024 in the middle of the war. This is the center of capital. And basically, these guys just, we've been doing this for 20 years. We know how to do that. Don't just don't get on the way.
So it looks like officially sanctioned theft with threats behind it.
With the support of police.
With the support of the police.
Well,
that is really unfortunate because I like your conclusion. If we don't beat this corruption, and I think most Ukrainians want to beat it, we're not going to have that golden era of investment that you
correct
that you see that we can.
I think not even the war stopping the investors, the corruption, like the corruption level of Ukraine is stopping investors, because the war at some point will end, and we will be at the point where, like, the investor comes and he'll be, all right, so, I mean, I want to make sure nothing happens to me. But at the same time, I spoke to so many foreign companies actually doing business in Ukraine. They said, look, when you do everything according to the law, I mean, in the last 10 years, we haven't had any problems. If you pay taxes, you know, the way you're supposed to pay them, you're not looking for any ways to avoid paying taxes, like the United States. And I love what United's like the politics of the United States. I mean, look, if you don't pay taxes, you'll go to jail.
Yes, but we have such a sophisticated level of corruption that actually legalize tax breaks. Yes, the lobbyists put in by law that they're exempted from this tax and that tax. So America's politics, which I've come to hate now because it's, you know, what's going on now in Ukraine is becoming a victim of it. It's different. Here it's more brazen and sort of easier to understand in a lot of ways.
Correct. But definitely, I agree with you 100%. If on a, I would say, a very simple level, when just I would say a regular cop is involved in the corruption, I mean, those old levels are corrupted. Not as much as back in the day, because there's already ways how to prosecute them, but they're not in jail yet. I mean, that's...
Yes, yes. Okay, so we got a long way to go. We both agree on that. And you also have recently had another really insightful editorial, because you went to America and you went back to Ukraine. And we have another crisis, demographic crisis. And a couple episodes ago, I had the latest study showing that most Ukrainian refugees, 5 million living abroad, will probably not come back. It looks like the ones in Europe Europeans are in no hurry for them to come back. They're extending their legal permits to stay. Can we get them back? And how serious of a problem is it if we lose these 5 million people? A big share of them are women of childbearing age.
I have a few views on that. I think everything in the hands of the government. I agree that, from my personal experience, when you immigrate, the first year you're still missing your home. The second year you start getting comfortable. Okay, you got a better job, you got a better car, and you're safe. There is no corruption. So you feel like, all right, not that bad. I'm still missing my relatives and friends and my hometown, but I'm okay right now. And when you get to the third year, this is when you kind of putting, like, your roots are getting deeper and deeper in the soil. And this is when, like, this is right now is a very pivotal moment, the third year of the war. This is when I would say probably 50% of people will most likely stay. However, what people? If you, for example, are well-educated, no language, or was able to learn language, because sooner or later you're going to get a good job, right? But most of the people, look at their jobs, the cleaning, they washing, you know, dishes. And do you think when somebody was working here, for example, in Kyiv, in Zhytomyr, maybe in some kind of store selling books, now she's mapping the floor? Do you think this is, she's happy about that?
So it's not a lost cause.
It's not a thing that all the people are going to stay. But at the same time, in order to attract as many people as possible back to Ukraine, so our government should create the conditions when people can actually make this $1,000. Because people will think, let's do the math. I'm the, you know, I love the numbers. You go to Poland, you make $1,000, okay? Out of this $1,000, you're going to pay probably $500-$600 for your apartment. Because, for example, when with your child, when you're with your child, you can't just rent the room. You spend $500 on that. Then you spend a couple of $100 on food, on this and that. So basically, you will the people realizing they spend all the money just to keep their pants off, you know, and they just to get by. When here in Ukraine, okay, she wasn't making that much money, but she was making maybe probably $500. But she has own apartment. She has, you know, she doesn't have to pay for that. So she knows everything. So there is a, if the people who come back have an opportunity to make as much money, I'm not talking about even Germany, where people on average probably make 1,500 euros, 1,800 euros.
Right.
But we talk about the average salary that people had in Poland, for example, $900, $1,000, most of the people will return. I've seen the people who returned. But then they said, look, despite the war, I just love Ukraine, I love my friends, I love my family because I want to be around my people. But at the same time, we need to make money. But the government should create jobs. I think if the reconstruction starts at the full speed, let's assume 2027, there is going to be a huge need for labor. And people, instead of working in Poland at the construction site for $1,200, I think they'll be happy to consider an option to work in Ukraine.
So that's encouraging. So it depends. You also have written favorably about Zelensky compared to Poroshenko. Do you still feel that way?
Many people asking me, what do you think about Zelensky? First of all, I'm not a person who can judge or should judge, or I just gonna give you my opinion. I think that I'm not a big fan of his office and what the office of President Zelensky is doing, but I'm pretty sure that Zelensky is the right president for this time. And I think nobody ever, not a single Ukrainian leader ever screamed out loud and fighting for aid. Please help Ukraine. Please help Ukraine. Please help Ukraine. So this guy, I mean, he reached out to all the leaders around the world. He traveled to all the countries around the world. And this is all actually what helps us to survive as of today, right? Even without, like, we understand we didn't get expected aid from the United States. My opinion, it sooner or later it will come, but he has done a tremendous job reaching out to the world, and actually he promoted Ukraine as a brand.
Right.
If he wins this war, I think he's going to be remembered for life.
Point well taken. And you see, we're veering off business news. And that's another reason why I like Ukraine business news. It gives you the business news, but it understands that there's a whole world out there, including politics. What are your plans for Ukraine business news? Because we are kind of starved for business news and we're starved for investment. I know the Kyiv Independent has Lily Bibbings is a good business editor. She worked for me when I was at the Kyiv Post. But what are your plans? It's not just a 5-day a week newsletter. I know you've got expansion plans.
Correct. So compared to the pre-war times, we struggle into business news. We have no choice, but we have to cover the war topics sometimes and other topics. But we're still trying to make sure that we have mostly a business and investing news in our magazine. But at the same time, we took an extra step and we branched out from Ukraine Business News, Ukraine Business Network, or we call it UBN Network. And I was lucky to have an English business partner. He's actually American, but lived and worked in the UK for a long time. His name is Mark McNamee. He joined me as a partner. at UBN Network. So basically, the idea was Ukraine Business News has a huge database of businesses, companies that are doing business in Ukraine, the companies who are interested in the Ukrainian market. However, these companies do not have enough tools to do due diligence or understand our market. So the idea was is to connect those businesses and give those tools that will help them actually to enter this market sooner. So basically, the general idea of UBN Network is to create a lead and close-knit business community to which our team will add value by providing tailored monthly and quarterly briefings and reports. So basically, what actually UBN Network provides, we have four live events per year at the Parkway Center, right?
Good conferences, yes. Two of them, yes.
So we also produce 12 monthly reports, four quarterly reports, and four benchmarking surveys. Actually, our latest benchmarking survey was cited by The Hill magazine, which, you know,
that's a huge publicity.
it's a huge exposure. Huge. Basically, so what actually UBN Network reports are? So our reports link the macro environment to the micro and helping businesses understand and manage the impact of the micro trends on their businesses with the right strategies and tactics. So basically, there are so many international companies that are doing business in Ukraine, and they have their headquarters in London, Brussels, New York, or, you know, whatever, any country you name. We have hundreds of businesses working here. But the picture is very distorted. What is actually happening here and what they see on TV. Because, you know, this is your industry, like how we love to find something like, you know, triggering. Like sometimes we might exaggerate things a little bit in order to bring the attention. So the picture is very distorted. And when the headquarters contacting the local offices and they say, oh, by the way, our competitors expanded. What do you mean expanded? You're being bombed on a daily basis. So basically the idea, so our reports talk about the real stuff, what is happening in the market. So usually businesses share our reports with the headquarters outside of the Ukraine to get a third-party objective overview of the market and help them better understand the business environment on the ground. So then it actually helps them to make the decisions. So we basically creating not just connecting people and businesses through our live events, we also providing lots of research like economic outlooks, so businesses have all the tools to make plans for the future.
Ambitious, filling a void. You know, when I and my team got fired from the Kyiv Post, we had put out a weekly newspaper for 26 plus years, and they killed it immediately after firing me. Is print dead? Do you foresee Ukraine Business News going into print?
We actually had a printed version of, we used to call it, quarterly opportunity reports, and that was a printed magazine. It was issued once a quarter, and it was dedicated to specific industry, for example energy. So, and we gathered as much information, we've done as many interviews as possible just to dedicate this 100 page issue dedicated to specific industry. So we actually looking forward to that, and we would love to have a well-known Brian Bonner to be a part of that soon. So this is the idea. This is our plans, and we are pursuing our plans no matter what. And I think that would be like people, are you crazy? I was like, I've seen what's happening in the offices of all these companies who are working in Ukraine. Because look, after each event, so our UBN network, our UBN community, we actually meeting with each company that came to our event. We know businesses personally. We know who is doing what, how they're doing, what they're struggling with, and what they're actually looking forward for the next year or two. This is how actually we're not just giving the information, we're gathering the information to create our reports. My point is, I go to all these offices and I see those little tables with the magazines, and I see how these magazines totally worn out. Why? People actually reading them. People actually reading those magazines, and I think there is a huge opportunity for them.
I hope so. I miss print, actually. but we'll have to talk about it. It's a difficult market either way you sure. slice. Either we are crazy or we're geniuses, right. one or the other, or maybe both, a little of both. Well, I think we're going to have to leave it there. It's been an enlightening discussion, Andrew. Maybe the final word about your name. Explain your shortening of Andrei Primachenko to Andrei right. Prima.
So basically, my real Ukrainian name, Andriy Primachenko. This is a very well-known last name in Ukraine because of Maria Primachenko, the world-known artist. But when I came, when I moved to the United States, unfortunately, the government offices used to make three mistakes in my last name. And
American.
In America, yeah. right. And since I was little, I used to have a nickname, Prima. We used to have the cigarettes, Prima. And that nickname, you know, was, you know.
I remember those.
Right. No filters.
The cheapest one.
Right. So, and I have that nickname since I was 5 or 6. And when I moved to the United States, I was like, all right, I'll be Andrew Prima. So
there we are. We have a Ukrainianized American or an Americanized Ukrainian. Very interesting businessman. Who puts out a very, very interesting, I think, must-read products keeps us well-informed on a daily basis. So congratulations. Good luck. I wish you success.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
And that's it for this edition of Ukraine Calling. Thank you all for joining us. You can see us on YouTube, obviously. You can see us on the Hromadske Radio's website, and wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate your support. Please tune in again next week for another exciting episode.
Ukraine Calling.